station.
Stand by for an urgent bulletin.
Showtime.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
Ready.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
Cleveland has no hitters. A bunch of Punch and Judy hitters is what we call them in our day. You punch and then you run like Judy.
I say wimpy, wompy, wambly.
Jeff Lutz.
Yeah, so we're sexist now. That's cool.
We like it.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
It's awesome, baby!
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Monday edition, the Bob and Jeff Show, KFH Radio. It's Bob Lutz, Jeff Lutz, co-hosting. Max Power Producing and Engineering, 869-1240. That's the IHOP hotline. My mouth's frozen.
The IHOP hotline is what that is.
The IHOP hotline.
Quit eating so much ice. Quit doing that.
Why?
It's just bad.
It's crushed ice.
I guess, whatever, but I wouldn't.
They told me to intake more water.
Yeah, so drink water.
I do, but I like ice.
Do you think it's thawing inside of you right now?
I don't know. What's happening?
Probably something like that.
It turns into liquid, doesn't it?
Eventually.
How's your weekend? We saw you yesterday.
Decent
youngster
weekend.
Getting ready to go to college. I understand from my wife that Aaron is on TikTok.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have TikTok. Should I get it?
What do you mean you understand from your wife? Aaron told
Debbie
her.
Debbie follows her on TikTok.
Why does Debbie have TikTok?
Because she wants to follow Aaron.
That's it? That's the only reason?
That's the only reason that I can determine.
The only reason I have TikTok is to follow comedian Todd Glass. I don't even follow him, but I don't follow anybody.
Why do you have it?
So I can go check his TikToks every now and then.
You say you don't follow him.
But I can go still to
don't
go to
don't you check
a,
your daughter's fashion?
Not really. Not that often.
Why?
I don't feel like it's my thing. That's her thing. She can have that.
But we're interested in it.
It's not that I'm not interested in what she's doing, but
I told Debbie on the way home yesterday, Aaron will probably end up doing as much modeling as she does designing.
Hard to say.
That's my prediction. I'm usually right.
I don't know. I don't know what they're looking for.
Well, you don't have the feel I do for
that. No, you are one of the great talent spotters and modeling that we've ever seen.
Well, I mean, I do have a knack for it.
Name another model you've discovered.
Chrissy Teigen.
Really? That was you?
Yes.
Not
did I get the name right?
You and John Legend.
Did I get the name right?
Yeah, she's had her issues over the years, though, so you probably could have picked somebody better.
Kathy Ireland.
That was also you? You're about the same age, aren't you?
Well, can I just say, and Debbie, if you're listening, indulge me. I'm almost 70. I'm harmless. In her day, Kathy Ireland was the most attractive woman.
She's aight.
Shut up with that.
She's aight.
Please don't try to be cool.
I'm just telling you.
Please don't try
to
be cool.
I'm not trying to be cool. I'm saying what I feel.
In my generation, that's it.
That's not your generation.
Of course it is.
No, Wes, like someone when I was growing up who was your generation, you got to go back to, I don't know.
Cheryl Teague.
No, it'd probably be like Fannie Mae something. I don't know the person's last name, but there's probably two names. One of them's probably Fannie, and that's probably the pinup girl in your generation.
Kathy Ireland's 61.
Right, so 30.
That means when I was 29, she was 20.
Yeah, that's not your generation. So 30 years ago, when people like me were entering their formative years, she was in her early 30s and in her peak.
When Kathy Ireland came on the scene, I was
you
let's
were
just
45
say,
and you had say, a poster in your room.
Let's just say I was viewing.
Yeah, we know.
Okay,
I lived with you. I saw those foldables.
Yeah, there were no posters.
I saw those foldables you hung up.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a terrible thing to say about your father. Especially when it's not true.
You had that Farrah Fawcett poster.
Some people will believe this.
You had, who's your girl? Raquel Welch. I know you had her.
Now there's another one. Yeah, Raquel Welch.
Yeah.
Now, she was older than me. But we all went gaga over Raquel Welch back in the day. For crying out loud.
My first person like that was Nikki Taylor.
Don't know her.
Yeah, you do. She's in every CoverGirl
commercial. Never made it, never amounted to much.
Yeah, she was in every CoverGirl commercial ever made.
Don't know her.
That's on you, man.
All right, we've got more Big 12 previews coming up today. 225 Jed Drenning, the sideline reporter for West Virginia Football Radio, will join us. And at 245, Stephen Johnson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram as we look at TCU. So West Virginia, TCU, we're crossing them off the list today.
Thank goodness. And I might ask Jed about this, but we've got Jed covering the poor Mountaineers, probably barely keep their family fed. Made me watch the first 8 minutes of the first episode of Beverly Hillbillies today. Kind of entertaining. I might go back to it.
Hmm. What did you just say?
Jed Clampett.
When you have
from
to
the,
try...
He's a poor Mountaineer.
When you have to
How
try,
do you not get that?
When you have to try that hard.
I'm not trying that hard. He's Jed covering the Mountaineers. Like the first 10 words in Beverly Hillbilly song is there's a Jed and a Mountaineer in there.
When you
Let
have
me tell you a little story about a man
when
named
you have
Jed.
To work that hard to explain it.
Poor Mountaineer. See, like 7 words.
When you have to work that hard.
Texas T.
To explain something.
I'm surprised you get I bet Max got it immediately.
Max didn't get it.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I wondered. I thought, man, what is my head? What's going on? Why don't I
Jed
understand?
Clampett.
Who? Who are you talking about?
Seriously?
Really? Who are you talking about?
Jed Clampett.
Okay.
Right.
Jed Clampett.
Yes.
Is he a West Virginia person?
He's the Beverly Hillbillies, you moron. No, you didn't know that.
I am such a gifted actor.
No, you're a moron. That's what I said, and that's what you are.
I am not a moron.
You didn't get it at first.
I played you.
You struggled to get it. No, you didn't.
Much like Banker Drysdale.
Never heard of him. Is that a Beverly Hillbillies person?
Yes.
I don't.
Buddy Ebsen, Max Baer Jr., Donna Douglas, Irene Ryan. Jane Hathaway played, wait a minute, Miss whatever her name was.
Well, I might go back to it.
Yeah, it's a great show. I watched it religiously growing up.
Yeah, you had 2 or 3 options. That was one of them.
No, I had many options. We lined them up.
In 1961?
We had all kinds of shows on.
Like what?
That was one, Green Acres. Was tremendous.
Different time slot.
Andy Griffith Show. We had I Dream of Jeannie.
Were these all CBS shows?
They were all fantastic.
Good.
Yeah, really good.
I Love Lucy.
I Love Lucy was great. All right, where are we with baseball? Let's get to that.
Where are you
Your
with
Guardians
baseball? Guardians
got a couple.
Salvage the split, if that's what it's called.
Now who do you have?
Cubs and then Milwaukee.
Tough stretch. Meanwhile, Kansas City begins a big series tonight in Minnesota. They just called up Zebby Matthews that did the Twins.
Saw him pitch many a time this season.
Is he a difference maker? Because he's
probably
touted to be.
Probably not immediately. I don't know if he's going to come in and just be the man, but he's a guy who down the road could absolutely be a mainstay in their rotation.
Well, they got him up there now.
He throws hard. He never walks anybody.
Well, why wouldn't you be an immediate contributor?
He got hit hard in AAA, and it seemed like in his last couple starts in AA, there was something a little off.
Huh.
And then he got hit hard in AAA, so we'll see.
Well, we will see. You better hope he... Who do you want in that series?
I don't know. Probably a split or 2 out of 3 for somebody. I don't want anybody running away with it. I think Minnesota will probably do better.
We'll see. The Royals are really legitimately good.
Is Zebby pitching today?
No. No, he's not pitching today.
You sure?
But I just got finished watching the Royals and Cardinals, and the Cardinals figured out a way to win the game on a Friday night. But the Royals are, they keep coming at you. There's no rest in that lineup. You can't, I know their numbers aren't always great, but they have a knack for, now this is against the Cardinals, so take it for what it's worth.
Not much.
We got the pitching staff of a, I could throw it for them. But they're really good.
Sure, they're fine.
No, they're really good.
They're fine. They're a nice little third-place club.
I predict they finish ahead of you.
Based on what?
I just do. I'm not saying that to get
but
you.
But based on what, though?
Based on seeing the teams.
So you haven't seen Cleveland?
Of course I've seen
You don't
Cleveland.
Watch them. I watch
Cleveland some.
But you watch them with a critical, like, I don't want Jeff to be
no, I don't too watch big him for that his way.
Bridges, and I don't...
I don't watch them that way. I watch them.
And I'm going to find the flaws in Cleveland.
You ask my wife. I watch them.
But I know how you
and
watch
them. I pull
them.
For them.
How?
Because you're for them.
But how do you pull for them? What do you do?
I don't despise them. If you put them in front of me and said, who do you want to win the American League Central, I'd say I want Cleveland.
Well, why has Cleveland been
I just don't think they're going to.
Why has Cleveland been ahead all year?
Because this is a long season.
But it's been all year. So there has to be something you have seen that makes you think.
Because I think the Royals are getting better while the Guardians are
getting better.
Kind of staying the same.
Not really. Did you see Gavin Williams pitch on Saturday?
They're 3-7 in their last 10.
Yeah, they lost 7 in a row.
The Royals are 6-4. That's a net gain of 3.
Great.
The Royals are 3 games out. With
they're 4 out.
No, they're 4.
That's what I said.
With 48 games to play for Kansas City, and fewer than that for 40,
we have like 44 to play.
Kansas City has more games to play.
Well, great. We have the tiebreaker over
not.
The Twins.
They've each played 118. So yeah, 44 games. The Royals have a better run differential.
So?
Than Cleveland.
We're getting Matthew Boyd back tomorrow.
Matthew Boyd, if you're hoping for something
watch.
From Matthew
Just
Boyd.
Just watch him.
I will watch him.
Okay, what do you, I bet he gets a quality start. 6 innings, 3 runs or less. You want to put.
Playing?
Cubs.
Who's pitching for the Cubs?
Who cares? Today or
now,
tomorrow?
In your favor, the Royals have a very difficult schedule.
So do the Guards.
The Guardians have the Cubs, Brewers, Yankees, Texas, then 4 games at home against Kansas City coming up later this month.
Well, I guess that'll tell us something.
That'll be big. Then they go to Kansas City very early in September, and then they're done. With the Royals. You still have the Dodgers to play. You still have Tampa. You've got the Cardinals.
Well, there's a break for us.
And you've got some games left with Houston. So we'll see. I'm not saying this to get under your skin. I think the Royals.
Well, you're wrong.
Are going to win that division.
You are Mr. Recency Bias. That's been your MO. Probably for your entire life. The last good thing I saw is the best thing I'm going to see.
No.
That's how you operate.
I don't say that very often. I don't. I don't believe that.
You do believe it. That's how you operate.
Here are the teams that will make the playoffs, if you want to know.
This is just you poking at me. That's all it is.
In the American League, Baltimore, the Yankees will make the playoffs. Cleveland... It gets tough. I could see all 3 teams in the Central making the playoffs.
They probably will. And then
Cleveland, Minnesota, and Kansas City.
And then Houston.
And then I think either Houston or Seattle. Both of those teams are worth keeping an eye on. They're both starting to play better.
They both start and stop.
So they could knock one of those Central teams out if
Bring
they're not
it.
Careful.
Bring it.
Your confidence isn't real because it goes from day to day. It ebbs and flows. What your confidence is today, it won't be tomorrow.
When you are out here poking holes in a team that you don't have as much familiarity with, yeah. And I think Matthew Boyd and Alex Cobb will be pretty good for our rotation.
Well, I hope they are. You need some stabilization in your rotation.
Right. And now we have five guys that we're going to probably roll with the rest of the year.
Cardinals brought Montgomery and Quintana a couple years ago, and they helped. So did Lester and Happ in the
right
way.
You just want some veterans. You want some innings. You want some professional big league
starts. We'll see what they do. The Royals have no concerns about their rotation.
They have a lot of concerns about their bullpen.
Ursig's coming to the rescue in a lot of those. They made a great acquisition getting Lucas Ursig. He's legit.
You know who's legit? Emmanuel Clase.
Well, now the Royals got somebody who can at least be in his realm.
Doubtful. But we'll see.
Listen, people out there know to listen to me.
There are very few in Emmanuel Clase's realm
this year. I didn't say he could be good. They at least have somebody who could be in his realm.
He's on his own planet this year.
The Royals now have a power arm that rivals the stuff of Emmanuel Clase.
Emmanuel Clase doesn't have stuff. He has a cutter and a slider.
Right.
And
that's stuff.
They beat it into the ground, and he gets three outs and 12 pitches, and we go home.
That's called stuff.
Meh.
And the Royals got a guy at the deadline. And listen, I don't like it any more than you do.
I don't care.
You'll care. When this thing gets to September 1 and it's heck, these three teams could be tied. And I'm just gonna say at that point.
Cleveland's been ahead all year.
All right. We'll see if they hold on.
Basically wire to wire. Okay, well, they still are half a game out from the best record in baseball.
Lead's starting to slip. You know it.
No, I don't.
You know it. No. You talk about it. You probably mention it to your other friends. Well, I hope I don't. Because this is the most nerve-wracking time.
I feel good.
When you get into August, the middle of August, and your team's in contention, kills you.
Not in contention. I'm in first place.
I don't view the Cardinals as being even in contention. Even though they're just a couple games out of a wild card.
I don't view Cleveland as being in contention. I view them as being in first place by themselves.
Your optimism is laughable because it'll change tomorrow.
It may not.
It doesn't matter.
You know what? I'm going to wake up tomorrow. I'm going to be in first place tomorrow.
It matters
too.
What I think, really, when it comes to baseball. That's not really just the facts.
But you say that, but I don't have to say it. Right?
Whatever.
You know, Bill James doesn't have to say it. Ken Rosenthal doesn't have to say, well, listen to me when it comes to baseball, folks. Because he knows he's an established voice. When you're begging for it, then I don't beg
for anything.
Well, neither does Ken Rosenthal.
I'm just telling you what I see. And I'm not saying it. You always act like it's personal.
It is.
It's silly.
It is personal.
I see the Royals. If I had to pick one of the three teams that's going to win that division.
They can't play on the road.
We'll look at them tonight.
They'll get blasted.
They got their three guys lined up for this series.
Minnesota is better than Kansas City.
We'll see. I predict the Royals win two out of three. If that doesn't happen and the Twins win two out of three or sweep, I'll be the first to get on this show.
No, you won't.
And say I was wrong.
You're gone Thursday. Is that why?
I'll get on Friday and say it. I'll get on Friday and say it.
Well, I'll get on Thursday and say it.
Fine.
We will rip you to shreds on Thursday.
And I see the Guardians probably. Where is this series? In Chicago?
No.
They should handle the Cubs. But the Cubs are weird. They're still hanging in. They think they have something to play for, and they're one of those teams that if they got hot in the final 6 weeks, nobody would be shocked. I don't like playing the Cubs. I'm glad the Cardinals are done with them.
This early?
They're an uncomfortable team to play.
Well, everybody kind of is.
Not really.
But I don't feel No, I feel good.
Nah, you feel good. You got it. You got
the
world.
We face a lefty tonight. We crush lefties. Everything's good.
You got the world by the tail, my friend.
Thank you.
We'll take a break. When we come back, Jed Drenning.
Clamp it.
Sideline reporter for West Virginia Radio will join us. We'll talk about the Mountaineers. Big 12 football previews continue. Bob and Jeff, KFH.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
Joined by Jed Drenning from West Virginia Football, sideline reporter for their radio broadcast. Jed, hello. Welcome.
I'm used to Country Roads as my walk-up music. You threw me off with that, guys.
Yeah, we should have done that. We should have done that for sure. How you been? How you doing? Everything going well?
Good summer. Great weather as of late. Got a little bit of rain, but we needed it. But the Mountain State's doing well. How about you guys?
We are good, Jed. Before we get into West Virginia football, we were talking in the first segment about Jed and a Mountaineer, and it got me thinking about Beverly Hillbillies. Is that something that you identify with?
I've probably only heard that since I was 2 years old.
Fair enough.
If I had a nickel for the 10 or 15,000 times I've heard that in my life, I'd have a lot of nickels. But, I'm very familiar with it.
Hardly unique, I'm sure. So let's get into West Virginia.
My dad didn't care if he named me Jeremiah Eucalyptus as long as he could call me Jed. So it's James Edward, but I go by Jed.
Well, there you go. Let's get into West Virginia football. They have quite an opener coming up on August 31st, just 2 weeks from this Saturday against Penn State. What are we expecting? Is this a year that West Virginia can make some progress? They're very difficult to play at home in Morgantown, but in recent years haven't quite figured out how to win on the road.
I think we fully expect with an opener like this, anytime you play a blue blood that's in the top 10 playing their best football, you're going to have your hands full irrespective of the circumstances of the venue. Last year, we played them tough for 2.5 quarters in front of 110,000 strong in Happy Valley. But this year, the faithful will be on our side. So it's going to be a challenge. But I think in this new Big 12 in particular, there's such parity. It's imperative to win in the league, but you're at home in this league. But you're going to have to find a way to travel and steal a couple. And I think one of the reasons that until recently we struggled on the road, not so much last year, is because the things that travel well are good defense and a good running game. And it wasn't until recently that we shored those two areas of our football program up. So we're probably in better position now than we were after being raided by the transfer, trying to sort through how to handle that like so many other programs were. Once things have stabilized, we got our trust in order, and you at least have a chance with Neil Brown to give him the opportunity to catch his breath and put a plan together in this college football 2.0 that we now live in, I think we're in a much better place with much better footing. So we can run the ball, and we can play much better defense. And I think that's why we can be a better road team than we were in the past.
And coming off a 9-4 season, Jeff.
Yeah, I apologize for being so general, but where does West Virginia kind of fit in this new-look Big 12? I would say maybe not a lot of people realize that they won 9 games last year and return a lot of offensive production from that team. Like you said, they've really kind of shored up their defense. So where does West Virginia fit in, and how much will we learn not only from their non-conference opener, but the game against KU as the conference opener in Morgantown?
I think that's what we're trying to sort through with so many of these teams in this new Big 12. You've got to, tip your cap to some of the teams just based on what they've recently done that I would consider at the very top. Utah after winning a couple Pac-12s. They've made quite a reputation for themselves. K-State with the recent success that they've had. Oklahoma State with the recent success that they've had. And these are all football teams that return a ton of talent. But, you know, then you have this long succession of teams that really, whoever stays healthy and whoever plays the most consistent brand of football is going to persevere. I could make a fairly compelling case, as could you guys, that I'd say as many as 10 teams have a chance to be in Dallas at the end of the year if they stay healthy and if they prove more consistent than the rest of the league. So I think those are the two critical pieces. Who can stay healthy and who can lay the fewest duds? It's difficult to get 18 to 23-year-old kids to show up week in, week out and be consistent. Whoever finds that magic formula, I think it's going to have an opportunity to be play very meaningful football, not just late November, but even in early December in the Big 12 championship game. And I think West Virginia is one of those teams. You talked about it. We return almost intact up, you know, offensively. We lost maybe the best center in the history of the program in Zach Frazier. We lost what we consider to be an NFL right tackle in Doug Nesser. But we had seven different offensive linemen start for us last year. Five of those seven are back. And most of our skill guys are back, and we've complemented that through the portal. Both of our quarterbacks return. And on the defensive side, we're very happy with what we've done to address some of the needs that we had through the portal. So I think we're going to have a puncher's chance if we stay healthy and we stay consistent.
Talking about West Virginia football with Jed Drenning, their sideline radio analyst, and we're happy to have him. So tell us about this quarterback, because I think it's just kind of strange, Jed. We sit here in Kansas and we hear all this talk about KU, K-State, and other teams, Utah, Arizona, Oklahoma State, but nobody says a whole lot about what West Virginia could do here. Garrett Green's one of the best quarterbacks in this conference, maybe in the whole country. It seems to me like West Virginia is not getting maybe enough love in the preseason. Am I wrong about that?
You're probably on point with it, and to be honest with you, I'm just fine with it. I mean, our popular refrain last season was we were picked 14th in a 14-team Big 12. And I don't know if you could be around this football team and have 3 minutes pass for 3 months without hearing the number 14 shouted and chanted. And it became an incantation of ours through the entire season. So we're picked in the middle of the pack. So we're climbing. But at the end of the day, I mean, again, you can make a case for those teams that are picked ahead of us. I mean, there's a lot of good football team in this league. There's a ton of depth. So until you go out and prove it, yeah, we won 9 games, but half a dozen teams in this league last year won 9 games, right? So there's a lot to be said for the depth of the league, and nobody ever won any football games from preseason hype. But there have been a lot of teams, in my experience, that have a bit of a chip on their shoulder due to the lack of preseason hype, so I'd prefer it to be that way. I mean, I think we're well-positioned, including Garrett. This is a quarterback-rich league. And there's a lot of talent at the top, as you guys just talked about. And so I kind of like where he's positioned. It puts a bit, maybe more of a chip on his shoulder, and he already had one. But he's a bit of a junkyard dog. The locker room, the kids pick up what he puts down. I think the things that he did well last year, you have to start with the fact that before winning football games, you have to avoid losing them. And from a ball security standpoint, he made a massive leap from the 22 season into the 23 season. There's a metric they call on PFF turnover-worthy plays, and he ranked among the Big 12 leaders after being dead last in the Big 12 in that category the year before. And he's hard to sack. That was a function of the offensive line. We have a solid group of tight ends, our backs and pass protection, but also the elusiveness of Garrett Green. So those two things together, not turning the ball over and not getting knocked backwards so you're able to stay on schedule and stay ahead of the sticks, that's what I hope we can continue to do where we left off last year before we get into making more splash plays and being more dynamic and being on the highlight reels. Before those things happen, first, let's do those two very critical things that not as many people are talking about.
Notwithstanding that tough opener against Penn State, does this feel like a team that can hit the ground running, maybe more so than last year? Because, like you said, they found a little bit of an identity running the ball and playing really good defense. And those, you know, units, the running game looks strong. The defense looks strong again. So, you know, what was kind of the process to finding that identity for West Virginia? And how does it kind of carry over to this year?
I think over the course of the last year and a half, we kind of did a rebrand or reinvented who we were the previous off season. And as you inserted Garrett Green and he became more comfortable down the stretch in 22, you saw what a new offense we were going to become because of his skill set. It was so fundamentally different from JT Daniels or Jarrett Daigie or any of the predecessors that, that Coach Brown had had here because of his dual skill set. And I think that, that what happened over the course of the 22 into 23 offseason was offensive coordinator Chad Scott, Matt Moore, our O-line coach, both have been with Neil Brown forever. They kind of got together and brainstormed what would best fit our personnel with this dual-threat kid at the point of attack. And that's what you ended up seeing, a team that ran the football 57% of the time. We do throw it. We throw it off play action and take shot plays. I mean, there was a lot of parallels to what we were doing offensively and what you guys were doing offensively with Andy Kotelnicki last year. I thought there were a lot of parallels. You guys, by you guys, I say Kansas. But so, run the football and run it effectively. That makes you effective both at home and on the road. And then off of that, force the defense to respect you, put them in a downhill posture, and take your shots with the play-action game. And that's what we became, and that caters to Garrett Green's skill set. Now, we had to start the season faster against Penn State, and we've catered our camp toward being more physical right out of the gates. We played Penn State well for a half, or like I said, 2.5 quarters, but it wasn't enough to sustain that for the balance of 60 minutes running into a physical brand like that. So we're having a lot more contact in this camp than we did a year ago. And I think that Neil recognizes we have to hit the ground running against Penn State. And then right out of it, we go into the backyard brawl after the Albany game. But when you look at the first string of Big 12 games we play, a lot of these interviews that I do and on the circuit in the Big 12 in Texas and Oklahoma, one of the first things they ask me is, man, who did you guys make mad in the league office to get that Big 12 schedule you have? And there's some merit to that. I mean, we have a run to start the Big 12 schedule. That's tough. There's no empty chairs. There's no layups. So we're going to have to come out of the chutes pretty fast.
Yeah, and you're referring to the home game against Kansas on the 21st of September, an off week. Then a game at Oklahoma State, at home against Iowa State, at home against Kansas State, and at on the road in Tucson against the University of Arizona. Of course, four of those five teams are ranked in the AP preseason poll. Good stuff. Hey, that's Jed, correct. We really appreciate you coming on to talk about West Virginia football. We're eager that opening game at home against Penn State in Morgantown. Certainly one of the highlight games of the opening weekend in college football. Thanks for your time.
Appreciate it. We're going to do what we can to carry the flag, not just for the Flying WV, but in that particular week, maybe for the league, right?
There you go. We appreciate your time, Jed.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Jed Drenning from West Virginia football. He's their radio sideline reporter.
Pretty knowledgeable.
He was a fantastic college player in his own, played at the Division II level.
Oh, there you go.
Set records. Played for Rich Rodriguez.
Oh, there you go. There's a connection. Former West Virginia head coach.
That's right.
Rich Rodriguez.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to get to you.
Then he went to Michigan, then he went to Arizona.
I'd watch out for West Virginia, but man, what a schedule.
Not easy. But once you get into Big 12 play, you reset, and who knows what could happen. That first game is going to be tough. I didn't realize West Virginia was as solid as they were. You think KU will be picked to win that game?
I don't know. It's in West Virginia.
Correct.
Very difficult to go to Morgantown and win.
It is.
Always has been, even when they haven't been really good. Keep an eye on the Mountaineers. Here's Stephen Johnson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We're sorry, Stephen, to give you a taste of what our show's normally like. We'll calm down now, okay?
No problem. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You bet. So we want to talk to you about TCU football, but first, what a year. And last year was what a year, too, with new teams coming into the Big 12, Cincinnati, Houston, Central Florida, Brigham Young. Here come four more new ones. It's almost more than anyone can keep up with. What are your thoughts, and then what are the thoughts of the TCU faithful?
I mean, it's just a new era in college football. I mean, I think you had to kind of pivot and find new teams. You couldn't replace Oklahoma and Texas with just two teams. So I think the numbers will help spread the Big 12 out across the entire country now. And then you add teams like Utah and Arizona, which had a good year last year. So I think it's an exciting time. I think in terms of TCU fans, like many other fans across the league, I think everybody's optimistic that their program can be the one that kind of feels that power vacuum left behind by Oklahoma and Texas. So I think TCU believes it has the resources, the location, obviously the key factors that you need to kind of be at the top of a conference. They just want to have a good season this year.
I don't know that TCU will be playing for the national championship. I also don't know that their season will be as disappointing as it was last year. Which version of those two teams is this team closest to, in your opinion?
It's hard to call. They seem like the group is more tight-knit than it was last year, where a couple players acknowledged over camp that there were a lot of individual agendas. Things in the locker room that I think were kind of pulling the team apart, whereas that team in 2022 was so tight. You had so many guys that had been through so much, and they kind of powered through all the adversity throughout the season. So with this group, I'm really not comfortable saying they're like either. I think they'll be an entirely brand-new group. There's a new defense. There's a new energy about the team. And also you have Josh Hoover, who showed flashes, now taking over full-time. So it's hard for me to really compare them, because in my mind, those two teams were, I think, were two extremes. And ultimately, I think this team is going to fall somewhere in the middle.
Steven Johnson with us. He covers TCU athletics for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. As we alluded to, we have now 16 teams in the Big 12. And if you read all the prognostications and the previews and the predictions, people are really having trouble breaking down who's going to be in the hunt. It's almost like you could make a case for at least three-quarters of the conference to have a chance to be in that top spot. That's kind of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of always how the Big 12 has been. Even the recent years, unless it was an Oklahoma team that was kind of towering over everybody. But the last 4 or 5 years before Texas won it last season, there was always a brand new or a random team that kind of went from middle of the pack to being at the top of the conference. I believe TCU was picked seventh the year they made it to the conference championship. Oklahoma State was a team last year that I think we all thought was going to be pretty bad. They ended up being a team that I believe won 10 games. So that's kind of the nature of the Big 12. The teams at the top, normally there's always going to be a team that's going to surprise you. And honestly, across the board, whether you're Arizona or UCF, well, I think UCF is going to be a really good challenger to make it to Arlington. I think there's reason everybody should feel confident, just because it's so wide open and there's not just this significant talent gap between, say, Kansas State and a team like Arizona like there would be if Oklahoma or Texas were still in the league.
So you can tell me if you disagree with the premise, but I think in this era of college football, when you have your coach and your quarterback returning, that sets you up pretty well. That gets you off to a decent start, or you're feeling good when you enter the season. So what can Josh Hoover, kind of now as that full-time guy entering the season, what can he provide, and how much does that help TCU, just having that consistency back there?
Well, I wouldn't be able to call it consistency, just because he only played, I think he only had 6 starts last year, and then he ended up missing the spring. So Josh, to me, is still more of an unknown than an answer right now. And the big focus for him, I think he brings arm strength. He brings a guy that he's able to stretch the field more than Chandler Morris did. And I think he's more of a gamer, man. You know, Chandler would look great in practice, but then sometimes when the lights would come on, you didn't see some of that accuracy translate onto the field. Josh, I think, is a guy that enjoys getting hit, doesn't mind it, kind of enjoys the atmosphere of it all. So I think he brings that in some great intangibles. But in every game he played last year, he had a turnover. Had a key interception against Texas. So right now the focus for him in fall camp has been trying to find that thin line between being a gunslinger and a game manager, knowing when to try to force the ball downfield and when to just be okay with the completion. I think he's made strides. He hasn't had just a standout, excellent camp, but I think he's made strides in that area, and I'm curious to see what he does this season as well.
talking to TCU football with Steven Johnson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. So TCU opens a couple weeks from Friday against Stanford, which is now a member of the ACC. I'm an old guy, Steven. I'm just having trouble wrapping my head around all this. So when you look at TCU's schedule, especially early on, how does it suit a fast start for the Horned Frogs?
Well, I think they'll get out to a 2-0 start. The Stanford game will be tricky just because it'll be a Friday game. You're flying across the country on the road. There are going to be mistakes there. But I think TCU has too much of a talent advantage. And if this defense performs how it's been performing throughout camp, I think they'll find a way to get it done on the road. Long Island U, that should be a game where they get a lot of the young guys in and start getting some reps for them. Then from there, man, it's going to be kind of a tough stretch. The next three games, you got UCF coming to Fort Worth. You go to SMU and to Kansas. So we're going to learn a lot about whether or not TCU is a viable contender, I think, in those three games. If you can get out of there 2-1, I think that says that's a very good sign that TCU can finish strong. But, you know, there's a real possibility they could lose all three of those games, you know, depending on if Jalen Daniels is healthy. SMU obviously feels really good about their team. I think my official prediction will probably have them – beating SMU and maybe losing those two games to UCF and Kansas just based off what I've seen and just what I know about the other teams they'll be facing at the time.
So you talked about some chemistry issues last year, some locker room stuff. What have you seen this year as far as that goes? You said it's improved. What do you think that chemistry will be like this year? What does it look like so far?
Well, you never really know until, you know, the real adversity hits. You know, it's camp, so everybody's saying the right things. And from what we've been observing, what they've been saying in the press conferences, it seems like everybody's on the same page. When it comes to the defense, I think there's just a better energy because more guys are making more plays. It's a way more aggressive style of defense. So a second-team safety can get an interception this day. A third-string DN is going to get a sack or something like that. So more guys are making plays. They have more depth. And I think guys are just having more fun, man. So I think that helps. And on the offensive side of the ball, I think it's just safe to say the guys kind of gravitate more towards Hoover than – maybe they did more. So I think that helps TCU just in regards to bringing everybody together. But ultimately, we're going to see how close this team is when things hit the fan, for lack of a better term. So that first game at Stanford after that first pick, if there's a mistake or they give them a touchdown, that'll be the first real test. And, you know, TCU's saying the right thing, but ultimately they'll have to come out to show it, and not just with the way they execute on the field, but also the way they try to stick together when things go wrong.
All right, really interesting stuff from Steven Johnson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Before we let you go, who's going to play in the championship game?
Oh, man, we talking Big 12 championship?
Big 12, yep.
Know what? I'll go Utah and Kansas.
That's good. All right, interesting stuff. Thank you again, Steven.
That's if Jalen Daniels stays healthy. If he stays healthy.
Yeah.
That's always a big if with Jalen. And if he does, I agree with you. I think the sky's the limit for them. But K-State has a pretty dynamic quarterback itself. So it'll be fascinating seasons, certainly, in the Big 12.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thanks. Thank you. Steven Johnson, Fort Worth Star-Telegram. As we continue Big 12 previews, only 27 left to go.
We'll have it knocked out by the beginning of the year, probably.
We've got one tomorrow, I can't get this guy to respond to me.
Who?
Guy from Tucson. I'll get him kicked out of the league, man.
What's his deal?
Don't worry about it. I got
it
covered.
You want me to find an Arizona guy?
No. And then Thursday we've got BYU. You'll handle that one.
Oh, I will.
Well, I won't be here.
You already have a book, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then Friday we'll talk Cincinnati Bearcats.
Exciting. I like BYU's coach. He's on Rome every now and then, and he's always
He's a good guy.
I don't know him personally, but he sounds like it.
Seems like a good guy. I've certainly had some interaction with him.
You have?
No. All right, we'll take a break. We've got an hour left of Bob and Jeff Draft coming up at 3:25. What's the subject matter today?
We're going to draft candies, but we're going to draft candies that you eat by the piece. So no, like, candy bars. I saw your Milk Duds up there. That got me inspired. So it's like your one-by-one candies.
Well, no candies one-by-one. You grab a few and you toss them. Like,
no, but there's a by-the-piece, though.
Yeah, but you toss them in.
Sometimes you do, but other times you don't.
Well, you can break off a piece of a candy bar.
But that's not a piece.
That's what I do.
You don't eat it by the piece.
I don't understand the whole provisions. I don't get it.
You know what I'm talking
about. Not really. I don't.
I promise you do.
You certainly break off a piece of candy bar.
But you don't eat it by the piece. You eat it by the bar.
There's no
individual pieces that come
in a Hershey's bar. They're in pieces.
No, you have to break them off.
We'll be back.